is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast once again. The 2019 week one is just mere days, hours, seconds away as the Seahawks get ready to kick off against the Cincinnati Bengals. Myself, Stuart Court, on this week's Pedestrian Podcast is, as ever, joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I am good. I am 1.1% slightly less happy than I was about an hour ago, which I'll go into during the pod, but apart from that, I would say I'm 90% instead of 91% okay, if you get my reference.
Yeah, I think so. So obviously this week we'll get into everything around the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll go through who made the cut on cutdown weekend as the Seahawks cut their roster down to 53 and added 10 names to their first practice squad, which as ever will be fluid. But if I asked you a question quickly, Adam, if you had 57 tackles from two players in 2018, what do you think it would get you?
I would say a third round pick and two linebackers that one of them, I'm not even sure, was a real human being.
Well, that's actually what our two players did, and in return, the Seahawks got this guy.
Now, you make mention of Bill O'Brien. He was a busy customer down there in the Lone Star State because this morning, another monster move taking place. Jadeveon Clowney traded to the Seahawks. Work it, make it, do it. Makes us all the better,
faster, stronger, stronger, stronger. On second and 11, Luck is dead. Jadeveon Clowney getting there for Houston.
Look at what Jadeveon Clowney does to Quentin Nelson. I mean, he just throws him right out of the club as he gets to Andrew Luck in a heartbeat.
Michigan at the 41. What a hit! Ball's free! On the ground! South Carolina deserves to have it, and they do!
Clowney just says, I'll take care of business right here.
Not many guys I've ever seen can get off the ball and rock people like Clowney.
That man is showing the world why he was a number one pick 3 years ago. Work it, make it, do it. Makes us all the
better, faster, stronger, stronger, stronger. Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
So yeah, the massive news of the weekend, as you heard from NFL Network, was broke some point on Saturday while I was in the no phone signal zone, which is the Copper Box Arena over in Stratford in London. Jadeveon Clowney, Adam, is a Seattle Seahawk. What's your one word and then obviously deeper dive reaction on JDC being in SEA?
I'd have to say the word would be tapped, because what it's suggesting is that our phone conversations are being tapped, Stu. Because this is something that you and I have been talking about for a long time. I think probably, maybe the word should be listening, because I reckon the Seahawks could be listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, my friend, because we called this in February?
Yeah. I think even earlier than that, to be honest.
It was a bit throwaway, like, you know, get Jadeveon Clowney.
But
they actually got Jadeveon Clowney, like one of my favourite players in the league.
Yeah, it's just crazy. The fact, like, I think on Saturday it come through that I think Aaron Wilson, the guy, I think he works for the Houston Chronicle. He works the beat down there in Houston. He was the first one to say he's not going to Miami. He wants to go to Philadelphia or Seattle. And it was, okay, this is on. This is happening. There's also that kind of past of the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, Schneider, making trades like this splashy around this time on that cutdown weekend, the final weekend, as it ramps up to week one. And then I think, yeah, and then it kind of happened. And then you kind of saw Jacob Martin, the sixth round pick last year, entering his second year after a pretty decent and pretty encouraging rookie year, and Barkevious Mingo, who spent the last 6 months on the roster bubble. I mean, it's quite, and then obviously the third round pick, which there's not much history of us doing much with anyway. So, and then you get a top three, top five, top two disruptive defensive talent in the league added to a roster, which, as we said, as we spoke about with Mike last week, it looked like it badly needed it. And then all of a sudden it kind of looks a bit shinier and more prosperous, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, Saturday was an amazing day. I was watching another both teams to score accumulator come crashing down in front of my eyes, and so was obviously flicking through social media and the Twitter sphere, seeing what was going on, and the trade was announced. And but it was, you know, Jermaine Clowney is signing for the Seahawks. We're going to find out the compensation soon. Now, I'm on record of saying that the Percy Harvin deal is a huge success in my eyes, because it gave me one of the finest moments of any of my sports fandom. And I don't give a shit that they gave up what they gave up for him, because that moment for me was something that I'll never forget. And so that's worth it for me. However, there are some people that could say they gave up too much, and some would say the same about the Sheldon Richardson deal. So I'm thinking, let's see what it is. I'm not going to be buzzing if it's an offensive lineman, because, you know, they're, as we said last week with Mike Dugar, they are harder to come by. Then they say it's not going to be that. So I'm thinking, okay, so it's probably going to be, you know, maybe Penny or Procise. So that's, you know, an interesting one. Then they say it's defensive players. And now it becomes a bit weird, because you're thinking, who the hell have we got that really is going to want that? Then they say linebackers. And I'm thinking, they can't be KJ Wright. It can't be KJ Wright, because he, you know, he's such a loyal guy, and KJ, you know, Ken Norton loves him. And then it's literally two, with all due respect, schlubs and a third round pick. That, like, schlubs is harsh, but it's two guys that, let's be honest, we would spend less than 3 minutes combined talking about on the podcast for the whole season. And for that, we get Jadeveon Clowney. And obviously people are clambering to, like, prove how much they know about football by saying, oh, by the way, actually, I'm not that happy we lost Jacob Martin. He looked good on special teams last year. Like, shut up! We got Jadeveon Clowney! It's the coolest thing that's ever happened.
Well, it's like, this is like some fangirl. I think this is the closest you're ever going to get to the Nathan fangirling out on the podcast.
To pull back the curtain, before he was drafted, my flatmate and I, Clowney was like the YouTube sports play that we'd go to as a look at how stupid this human being is versus other human beings. So I've always kind of carried that through. And then watching him at Houston, I just love the splashy plays that he would make. The run stopping is obviously something, but there's, you know, some plays, and in a game that we still managed to score like 700 points, I feel like he decimated the Seahawks last 2 years ago. Yeah, there were so many times where they kept running at him and nothing was happening, because he was just destroying like eight offensive linemen in one go. And he's just like a bigger human being than there's ever been. And that's so much fun to watch.
He's, I mean, there's a bit on our pal Mike Dugas' podcast this week, or today, or yesterday, where he talks, where they have a weird moment where they kind of try and find out if Clowney did actually kill that Michigan running back on that play. In the thing, he didn't have an NFL career, but he did not die on the field that day against South Carolina. But he's just like the few highlights you can find, because there's very little on Clowney on different websites that you can put clips together like we have at the start of this pod. But every single one, I mean, there's one last year where he's sacking Andrew Luck, which is kind of weird watching at this point, but he got to Andrew Luck via through Quinton Nelson, who, for everyone who watches the game with more knowledge than me and you will ever probably have, is the best and most impressive and this and that, and he's the next rogue. You need to build a team around this guy, and Jadeveon Clowney is making him look like an undrafted free agent playing the fourth preseason game. He's a ridiculous football player, and as you said a couple of weeks ago, I think you maybe even said last week, this season's probably going to just be about having the as much fun watching this team as we can. And this team having Jadeveon Clowney and giving up Mingo Martin and a South Carolina third round pick is exactly that, isn't it? And like, we can worry about the fit when he's got 2.5 sacks through 7 games, but it's more about the other three that word being fun, isn't it?
100%. Let's enjoy it, and even if it is a rental, which I don't think it will be, let's just have a blast watching it.
I mean, also, past players and picks we give up, they're paying half of his salary for this year.
Yeah, it's not even. Yeah, it's $7 million it's costing, so it's not even expensive. Yeah.
And then you add in the $4 million we've saved by getting rid of Mingo. It's just, what I mean, that Bill Belichick coaching tree is truly quite something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost like they could do with a GM.
Yeah, not just something. Yeah, I mean, and also the added fact that Jadeveon Clowney, as I put on Facebook and Twitter, almost odd and winged it by the fact that he was actually in VMAC in the building in Seattle, sitting next to Pete Carroll while the deal was going through. It, like I said, was quite a fun visual. But also, outside Clowney, obviously the team released its only PR, ladies and gents, so don't read too much into it. The depth chart, and on the other side, Adam, is what appears to be as healthy as he's going to get Ziggy Ansah, and then there's some dread to that defensive end, isn't there?
Yeah, it may not last a long time, but I think Sunday watching that defense play, it should be one that we enjoy against a pretty banged up opposition offensive line. Hopefully it should just be a great watch. I've probably put the mockers on it already, but yeah. You know, it could be great fun.
Yeah, obviously that all came a few hours before, well, maybe a bit longer than that, the 53 was cut down. Names like Jaron Brown was cut and then re-signed. Deshaun Shedd was cut, and per John Clayton on 710 ESPN, he's likely to end back up on the team in the next couple of weeks, which is just a strange way of doing business. The business side of the NFL, I don't really understand. Geno Smith was cut to make way initially for for Clowney. But then he also re-signed. But any surprises on that 53 by their presence or lack thereof?
I think in a way the roster in the middle of week two is what I would call like the roster, because we all know the game they play where they cut the veterans so their salaries aren't guaranteed and sign them after week one. So I think before people kind of genuflect too much on like Jaron Brown and Geno Smith and Deshaun Shedd, I think those were probably three surprise cuts. As you say, two of them have already been addressed. But let's see what we're looking like after week one when those full guarantee contracts are done with, which is a really a disgusting thing to do, let's be honest. It's really horrible. So let's see what happens after that, and then we can really say kind of what the roster it looks like. But I've got this weird sensation, which I think other people call optimism. And I got to say, I don't like it one bit.
I'm not a fan of it.
Let's see.
I'm not a fan of it. But also, I think it's kind of obvious with some of the cuts they did make. Obviously, examples like Jaron Brown, it come back around and he's back on the roster. But there's definitely a way of going across the youth movement, because all the draft picks made the roster. And it's not always been the case, and for many observers closer up than we are, it didn't seem likely to be the case either, a week, 7, 8, 9 days ago, did it? And the people at BBK made the team. Gary Jennings, despite doing next to nothing during the summer and preseason, made the team. There's this definite youth movement, and which is underway, which is all about upside and kind of what you can do for me in 2020, 2021, rather than pressure to perform week one against the Bengals, Alan.
Yeah, BBK was definitely one that you just kind of thought there's not going to be enough spaces in the roster for you to make it, unfortunately. So I'm really pleased that he did. And I like the look of it. I still think it's shorter receiver, but it was going to be shorter receiver regardless. So
yeah.
Maybe that's addressed by they picking someone up or they make a trade. But I think overall, yeah, I think we can be pretty optimistic.
Yeah, the practice squad after the 53 was also rounded off. Obviously, this will change a lot during the season. Wide receiver Jazz Ferguson, wide receiver Terry Wright, tight end Jacob Hollis, who was picked up in the trade earlier this offseason with the Patriots. Ian Thomas, guard Jordan Bruce, who our pal Mike Dugard called Creature Man on Twitter, tackle Elijah Nkansa, center guard lineman Kyle Fuller, cornerback Ryan Neal, guard Khalil McKenzie, and the one I'm most excited about, again coming back to Clowney, is Jakai Polite, who was a third round pick for the Jets, and at one point I think another one of our pals, Rob Staton, was high on him being the Seahawks first round pick, but it didn't seem like he got off. And he got away too much from his, which was a train wreck performance in Indy at the Combine, but now he's a Seahawk. And there's one name when you watch his Florida tape, which comes up a lot, and it came up in our conversations during last year's college season, Adam.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And it's a position that, you know, it's always good to have that sort of depth in the practice squad. So it'll be interesting to see how quickly he's promoted. You know, you hate to think that maybe, you know, an injury here or there, it would be the kind of thing that would do it. But, you know, we know about Ansa and his health problems. Maybe that's what give him an opening. Or maybe he performed so well on the practice squad that they can't ignore him.
Yeah, but those rumoured, alleged $100,000 fines he took from the Jets for tardiness and just general lackadaisical approach to being the New York Jet is quite worrying, also explains why they were so quick in getting rid of someone who a year ago was a top 10, top 15 draft pick, which also shows how much and how fluid that aspect of this sport, game and league is. But obviously with Clowney now in his back pocket, all the work he's put into that, which sounds like it's been, as you say, it's been something that's going on since February. It kind of, as I kind of intimated in our chats, There's a sense, I have a sense that John Schneider made the Frank Clark deal knowing that this could be something that was in the offing, because obviously agents, GMs, when they had one back in February, do talk, and I think John Schneider was pretty in tune and very ear to the ground with this. It's been quite a summer for John Schneider, isn't it? He's had a bit of flack for draft picks which haven't panned out as they did over his first 2 or 3 years, but this summer he's having his best summer yet, isn't he?
I think so. If you look at total ins versus total outs versus the renewals that were done, which let's not forget, you know, it was no guarantee at all before the summer started that, you know, Wagner and Wilson would both be re-signed to the roster. I think it's been a fantastic summer.
Yeah, it really has been something. So obviously I think that is everything. Obviously the other roster move they made was Ed Dixon. Was put on IR. That, all the talk of praising Schneider for this summer, that's a move which hasn't really panned out as one would hope with the money we give him 18 months ago, Adam.
No, that was a strange one at the time. Although when he has played, he's been a decent member of the roster. But yeah, it's not one that's particularly worked out, you'd have to say.
Yeah.
That's the Woots mentality. You know, we don't care about how many targets we've had throughout the course of the game or what the numbers are. We're savages. When it's our time to make plays and when we're given the opportunity to make plays, we are going to make them. And we have shown that, you know, the Woots legacy and tradition has been since Sidney Rice was here. So, you know, it's not going
to
change.
To start this year, the Seahawks kick off their 2019 season hosting the Cincinnati Bengals, a non-conference opponent, and the Seahawks have not had it easy against in their recent matchups in the last decade or so. To help us talk that, though, because me and Adam are completely clueless on, well, the Seahawks, but also the Bengals, we have company.
What about that shadowy place?
That's beyond our borders. You must never go there. Everything you see exists together in a delicate balance. You need to understand that balance and respect all the creatures.
So yeah, the Seahawks are 9-10 all time against this week's opponents. The last game was in 2015 when a late comeback saw an overtime game-winning field goal by Cincinnati, but the last time they were in Seattle wasn't as close the Bengals winning by 22 points at CenturyLink Field. But the league and Seahawks on that day got their first glimpse at a certain cornerback from Stanford.
Dalton, up the right sideline. Intercepted! Richard Sherman was right there. A turnover by the Seahawks.
8 years really is a long time in the sport, isn't it, Adam?
It certainly is. And bring on the first game of the season. And yes, taking back of the rivalry. I was in Seattle watching the last Bengals game in a casino in Spokane, of all places. No, not Spokane. just south of Seattle. And we were romping through, having a great morning. And then all of a sudden, shit absolutely hit the fan. And we chucked it. But yeah. I'm sure there's someone that's got much more favorable memories of that. With our guests, Stu.
Yeah, so to help us chat more and find out more about these 2019 Cincinnati Bengals, we are joined by Paul Hirons from the UK Bengals and also the Cincinnati Bengals UK fan group as well. Welcome, Paul.
Hello, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Not too bad. How did I do with your name?
Excellent.
Yeah, nice.
I know you were a little bit worried about
it. I was. I was.
That was spot on, mate. Spot on.
I was, but I think first name basis would have been a bit too familial at this point.
Yeah, it's not good. You know, we barely started our relationship. You know, you've got to take me out to
dinner
first, mate. Come on now.
Yeah. So obviously, as we said off, as I introduced you, you do host the UK Bengals pub, and as I said before we started recording, it's got possibly the best name of all podcasts this side of the pond, Paul.
You think so? Well. Yeah, we started the podcast around, I don't know, two and a bit years ago. And just as an experiment, really, we obviously were in the business of uniting as many Bengals fans out there in the UK as possible. And yes, there are Bengals fans here in the UK, believe it or not. And
I know one.
There you go. And so that's always been my prime objective with the group. And obviously every, you know, man, woman and their dog are doing a podcast these days. So we thought we'd give it a crack. And it's gone down really well. And it's kind of helped boost our profile in the States. And it's had the desired effect. It's just another way to kind of, you know, help to unite the fans in this country. So it's been really good. And when we first started, we didn't really have a name for it. You know, we were thinking about various sort of iterations of tigers and stripes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we put it out to our followers, both on Twitter and Facebook. And then just this guy came out of nowhere and said, how about Cincinnati? And it was kind of like, God, that's perfect. It made us chuckle straight away. And it was kind of, you know, Natter is a very sort of Brit, even though we are a fan group that obviously follows an American sports team, we do like to retain a lot of Britishness in our product, if you see what I mean. Yeah. So the word Natter is a very British word, and you know, kind of allied to Cincy, it just kind of worked perfectly, really. So I'm glad you like it.
It is. I'm a big fan of it. So we ask our Seahawks guys when we have fellow UK Seahawkers, or even when we have people who cover the team more closely than we do. So we'll ask you as well, why and when did you start following the Bengals?
It's a question. It's an often asked question. For me, it was 1986, so that's sort of showing my age a little bit, I think. And I started secondary school and fell into a new group of mates, and they were all into the NFL. And around that time, the NFL was getting a lot of sort of cult following, a bigger cult following, because Channel 4 had just started showing weekly highlights. You had William the Refrigerator Perry was going nuts in the media. So a lot of people were being turned onto the sport. And, you know, a lot of my friends were, I don't know, Raiders supporters and Dolphins supporters, because this was the time of Dan Marino and Joe Montana and all those guys, you know, proper legends, you know. And me being me, I thought, you know, supporting all those guys felt like a bit dull. I needed my own thing, my own team to support. So I was watching the American football on Channel 4, and I saw this left-handed blonde bombshell quarterback with tiger stripes on his helmet, and he was chucking the ball like, you know, rainbows down the field. And I just thought, wow, that kit is amazing. He looks incredible. The actual word Cincinnati was kind of quite an exotic sounding word. So everything, it just sort of clicked into place. So in that moment onwards, I was a Bengals fan. And a couple of years later, they obviously got to the Super Bowl. And I kind of thought, blimey, I've made the right decision here, haven't I? And then the 1990s happened, and I questioned that decision pretty much every year for that entire decade. So that's basically the story of how I supported them. It was all to do with cool uniforms and a fantastic looking quarterback.
Yeah, that seems, and that's still the case. Sorry,
yeah, it seems absolutely the right way to do it. I'm pretty absolutely. Sure that's how most people in the UK have picked their teams, sure. to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just imagine those Seahawks fans who got into the team watching Charlie Whitehurst feel.
Those are the good days.
That takes dedication, mate. It's funny, someone on our feed, you know, I don't know whether you get it on your feed, but there's a couple of guys in America that kind of post up kind of little YouTube videos of old kind of games, you know, like from, you know, 60s, 70s, whatever. And I always really love seeing those little clips to see old players. And of course, it being the weekend of the Bengals Seahawks, they've been posting a couple of recent matchups. Obviously, the matchup in Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati 4 years ago, and the one previously in 2011 when I think Richard Sherman made his debut, and also it was the rookie year of Andy Dalton and AJ Green. But they also posted the playoff game between the Seahawks and the Bengals. There was a clip of that doing the rounds today with like Dave Craig and Steve Largent and Curtis Warner. And it was the playoff game in 88. And, you know, we won because obviously we got to the Super Bowl last year. But that did bring back quite a few memories. I remember watching that game.
So obviously 2019, the offseason leading up to it, has been one of vast changes, it seems, from the outside. Is confidence flowing through your veins 90-odd hours away from kickoff?
No.
Now, that's interesting because there are some people that have got, well, seem to be fairly high on the Bengals, and, you know, finally they get a change of head coach, which I'm sure is not too long overdue for a number of fans who I'm sure have been wanting that for a long time, to get rid of old Marv. But there seems to be a bit more positivity in the kind of general NFL the Bengals than that response of yours suggests.
Yeah, I know. I was being a bit facetious, really. I think you're right. I mean, I actually was a fan of Marvin. I thought he actually did a very good job, and I think history will look back on his tenure a lot more favourably than people are looking at it now. Agreed. But, you know, Marvin's in the past, and yeah, we needed a change. I'm not arguing against that at all. We probably needed a change about 5-6 years ago. Do you know what I mean? I know, actually, when we lost to the Steelers in that playoff game, the game that shall not be mentioned, as we normally call it, perhaps there should have been a change there. But, you know, Marvin stayed there for too long. I think everyone's agreed on that. So, yeah, of course, you know, it was really weird because everyone was calling for Marvin's head, if you like, and calling for a change. And, of course, he, you know, it was very stale. The crowds had gone down like you wouldn't believe. So that's when organizationally, they'd sit up and take notice when money starts to be involved. And suddenly they hired this new guy, but he's 36. He's never called plays on a sideline before, you know, or maybe he has in his university days. But so suddenly everyone was sort of screaming for a change. And then when they got it, they got this radical change, which is very un-Bengals-like because we're a very conservative, with a small C, organization. Do you know what I mean? So when they made this radical change, I mean for Bengals, I can't understate this or even overstate it. I can't state it, you know, more forcefully. This was a radical change. Load of coaches went with Marvin. So Zach had to spend a bit of time because of the Rams getting to the Super Bowl. It was quite a protracted, long, drawn out process, actually, because, you know, we couldn't announce him because of this ridiculous Super Bowl, not ridiculous, but because of the Rams Super Bowl win. And, you know, there are various rules in place for that. So when he did get here, he brought in, you know, the search was on for a whole new coaching team. But we were kind of a bit nervous. You know, it was like, oh, my goodness, this young guy, he hasn't been a head coach before. But yet we were kind of crying out for that. And I think that shows you what the Bengals fan base is like. Very sort of cynical, very fatalistic. Do you know what I mean? And but yeah, I mean, he's been on our podcast. We've had Zach Taylor on the podcast.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
For our 50th episode a few months back in May. And he talks a good game. It is night and day in the way that he talks and Marvin talks. You know, Marvin was a good guy, but this guy is properly media switched on. He's very engaging. He's got really good energy. He's obviously, he knows a lot about the game and is a student of the game. You know, but of course, talking a good game and actually, you know, getting results are two entirely different things. But from what we can see from the outside in, the players are totally bought into him. It's a new way of doing things. So now it's time to see whether he can walk the walk, you know, and it's going to be really interesting.
Obviously, moving into this game, though, week one, the biggest headline thing, I think, definitely caught my attention was the early preseason injury of AJ Green. He's obviously missing this game.
Yeah.
Tyler Boyd, he's the man to step in that breach, as he did at some point and pretty handsomely and pretty smoothly last year as well, didn't he?
Yeah, really, very much so. I mean, he had a tremendous year. Last year was his breakout year. There's no question about that. AJ went down again. I mean, AJ Green often, you know, obviously I'm a homer, but really when AJ plays, and this is something that the Bengals don't get full stop, quite frankly, from the American national media. They don't get any praise or whatever. AJ to me, you watch him week in, week out. He is still one of the league's, I would say, borderline top five receivers. He's that good, and yet he just doesn't get the headlines at all. And we can discuss that in another podcast on another day. But, yes, that was a crushing blow. He came back from injury and then was injured literally almost the first snap on the first practice, you know, practice really in camp. And, you know, Bengals been the Bengals. They played it quite close to their chest. And it looks as though he's going to be out for three games at least. And we're hoping he's going to be back for the Buffalo game week three. But you never know. But, you know, he's certainly out this week. Just real quick, guys, the interesting wrinkle in the receiving group is that Zach Taylor announced that an undrafted free agent rookie, Damian Willis, will be starting in AJ Green's place. And he announced that a week or so ago, which is unheard of in Cincinnati. So not only is it a bold move to start an undrafted free agent, but it was a bold move to actually name him as a starter a week or so ago. So you're looking at Tyler Boyd, you're looking at Damian Willis as the ex receivers, and John Ross maybe in the slot or swapping over with Tyler Boyd. You know, probably, you know, John Ross is an interesting one. He's a good kid. He was our first round draft pick a couple of years ago. He got into Marvin's bad books. He seems to have quite early and was kind of benched and then injured for much of his rookie year. He is plagued by little mental errors and they affect his confidence. He's a real kind of sensitive guy, and he's not sort of got that steel, you know what I mean? He's got very, very soft skin, if you see what I mean. And and also being a very fast player, he's got these quick twitch muscles that just go all the time. So he was dealing with hamstring issues right throughout camp, but he's now training and he'll be starting in Seattle on Sunday. So the receiving group, quite interesting.
Back home, I mean, in Seattle, John Ross.
Yeah, back home.
I have his college jersey, I'll have you know.
Well, it's just, you know, I watched a bit, obviously, you know, when you draft someone that high, you want to know more about. I don't watch college football that much, but I obviously dug into him, into his career up there, and he looked sensational. I had a few friends who do watch college football, and they said, you're getting an extremely good player. It's just whether physically he can cut it in the NFL, which so far he hasn't, frankly. And he's revealed some sort of also slight mental fragility as well. So, but I mean, I'm a long way from calling him a bust. You know, I think, you know, he scored 7 touchdowns last year, which was pretty amazing, considering the amount of kind of snaps that he had and receptions he had. So he is a dangerous player. And we, you know, I'm just personally hoping that he, you know, he really just gets it and he can stay healthy, because he's going to be a big, big threat, I think.
In terms of a slightly more, you know, general thing, you're in a division which is now looking as maybe as stacked as it's ever been, with, you know, Lamar Jackson taking over in Baltimore, Baker Mayfield, and we know what the, you know, how the Browns are, you know, being lauded right from the outset. And I really don't think the Steelers are going to experience much of a drop off, if any. With the loss of a couple of players. But what's the general Bengals view on a divisional, you know, positioning as it goes into this year? You know, it's going to be 6 tough games.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of chat about, you know, 9 wins will win the division this year because of the, you know, we're always going to get sort of beaten up by the media. This is not me with a big chip on my shoulder, I promise you. But, you know, we're being talked about as a kind of 4-12, 5-11 team. And I genuinely think we're more talented than that. But, you know, we have got a rookie head coach. We do have pretty much the same team as last year with a few notable additions. So it could go either way with us, quite frankly. We're not quite sure what we're going to get out of this team this year. It could be a disaster. It could be encouraging, and I think actually will be a fun team to watch. But to answer your question, the Browns are obviously on paper the most talented team in that division now. I mean, there's no question about that, I think. But I think everyone's waiting for them to fall flat on their faces, to be honest with you. There's a touch of arrogance about them, which I personally don't like. Baker Mayfield is now sort of soared up to the top of the kind of public enemy number one. It used to be any Pittsburgh Steelers. Now it's kind of Baker Mayfield for, you know, the really immature and kind of, you know, just immature way he's kind of acted over, you know, with various comments and whatnot. So we're waiting for the Browns to fall flat on their faces, and I think that'll be hilarious. Now, whether they will or not, who knows? But they do have a really talented team. There's no getting away from that. It's interesting that you say about the Steelers, because a lot of people think there will be a regression with the Steelers this year. But, you know one thing that's going to happen with the Steelers, they're going to be tough to beat. And they do have, I think with the Steelers, they've just got such a fantastic offensive line. And, you know, Connor will probably have another good year. James Washington's going to be interesting opposite Juju. I mean, Juju is widely hated by Bengals fans. So, and their defense will be good. Again, it's just whether their secondary can stack up. But so they'll be in the mix. Baltimore are interesting. We always play Baltimore really, really tough. And, you know, it's quite a, there's not too much of a rivalry there with the Ravens like there is with the Steelers. And now the Browns coming back up. But we always play them pretty well, and it's just going to be really interesting to see what Jackson can do in his, you know, second full year of starting. There's a lot of chat about whether he can actually chuck the ball about and whether people will have found him out in the second year. But we'll have to wait and see. I know that the Ravens have, you know, they've lost some big names on defense as well, so I don't quite know what we're going to get out of Baltimore either, but we'll see. We'll see.
With the Ravens, I think Adam can agree here, as we often see on Seahawks Twitter, Earl Thomas matters a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that signing is going to be massive to that defense. Also, the game I'm going out to Seattle to see this year is against the Ravens for that very reason. On one more thing on the offensive side of the ball, is with AJ's absence for the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, yeah, and obviously going probably be a bit longer until he's up to full speed. There's a lot on Joe Mixon again entering 2019, and haven't you just recently picked up his former running mate Oklahoma, haven't you, Perine?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I mean, we drafted two new running backs this year, Travion Williams and Rodney Anderson. Rodney Anderson, again, another ex Sooner from Oklahoma. Very talented, apparently, dogged by injuries. Just come back from an ACL tear, and wouldn't you know it, he re-tore that ACL in the, if it wasn't the final preseason game, it was the penultimate one against the Giants. So that was really rough because he looked pretty good in preseason, and that was interesting. So that's why we signed Perrine from the ex Redskin. Now, Mixon was kept under wraps, I think it would be the right expression, in this preseason. We hardly saw him, and he played a little bit against the Redskins and a little bit against the Giants. But he was kept pretty much under wraps. And I think that was because of what happened to AJ. You know, they didn't want to risk, you know, a couple of their top stars getting injured. You know, I'm just about to cough, by the way. So, yeah, they didn't want to risk getting him injured after what happened to AJ, which I guess is sound thinking. But, yeah, a lot of people think Mixon's going to have a big year, and I think he will have a really good year, especially when you consider that a lot of, you know, scheme-wise, a lot of stuff Zach will be bringing from the Rams. So a lot of kind of inside zone stuff, a lot of play action. So, you know, you just have to look what happened with the Rams, and I know you know those guys really, really well. So, you know, we're hoping that Mixon will have the same sort of impact that Todd Gurley has had in that system, and we're hoping that, you know, Dalton can get it out quickly against you guys, and, you know, get it out to Boyd, get it out to Giovanni Bernard, get it out to, you know, Tyler Eifert's back and healthy. So we're kind of, you know, hopeful that it will be spread around a bit. But you're right, it is a crucial year for Joe Mixon. It's his contract year. So, yeah, we're hoping that he's going to kind of have a good one. And I think lots of people think he will have a good year.
Yeah. And what about the Red Rifle? Because ultimately, with all these teams, you live and die by the state of your quarterback, and he is a man that's much, you know, much maligned, much mocked, but has shown many a flash in his, you know, 8-year career so far that would suggest that he, with good surrounding talent, can be certainly serviceable, and I would say good enough to take a team where they want to go if the rest of the stuff around him goes well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, you just have to look at the last time we played each other in 2015, and that was his best year by far. And he was tremendous, and he was fantastic in that game against you guys. You know, that's one of his, you know, that's one of my favorite games from the Dalton era, because I was sitting there watching it with my best mate, who's a Seahawks fan, and we watched it together, and it was, you know, kind of to-ing and fro-ing. It was a fantastic game, and he played very well that day, I seem to remember. And he can do it. I'm not a huge fan of Dalton. I don't think he's awful, and I don't think he's brilliant. He's a good, above-average quarterback. And unfortunately, he's not a sexy, gunslinging quarterback, you know, with, you know, kind of, it will stand in the pocket and chuck it all over the place. He is your prototypical West Coast quarterback. He is a quiet, God-fearing guy. He listens to Coldplay and he does Pilates, right? And that's it. And so, you know, he doesn't get many headlines, and he's not one of those quarterbacks that, you know, that you kind of would have posters of him on your wall, quite frankly. He's just a good guy. He's just a normal bloke, you know what I mean? And that doesn't make headlines in the NFL, unfortunately. Now, in terms of on the field, his deep ball has never been fantastic, but what he is good at, pre-snap reads and getting the ball out quickly. So, last year he started off like a house on fire. He was playing the first 4 or 5 games last year. He was playing like better than I've ever seen him. He looked really relaxed. He looked really comfortable. He was pinging the ball out all over the place. he was looking really, really good. And then the last couple of games before he got injured, he started to regress into that kind of quite inconsistent Andy Dalton, bad Andy, as Bengals fans call him. So we're hoping this year that he's just, and certainly if you look at, again, if you look at what Taylor had with the Rams, I would say Goff and Dalton are actually quite comparable. Yep. They're sort of game manager types. They're not sort of, you know, the kind of big personality quarterbacks. They are efficient. They get the job done. Nothing too flash, nothing too amazing, but they do get the job done. And Dalton's a similar kind of player to that. So I think Taylor's quite comfortable with Andy Dalton at the moment. I think he's his sort of quarterback. And we're hoping, you know, as I say, with this new scheme that Taylor's going to bring in, it will suit him down to the ground. Obviously, time will tell. But, yeah, there's no reason why Andy Dalton can't play or get back to those heights, those sort of... I mean, he was being talked about in 2015 as an MVP candidate, if you remember. So there's no reason why he can't kind of get back to those heights. He's got talent around him again, as you rightly say, but he has to do it this year because it's not quite his contract year. He's got another year left on his contract, but they can get out of it quite quickly. And with a new head coach, and if you don't get out of, you know, if you don't impress in that first year, then watch out for the draft next year. Because I think, I mean, we've been speculating it could be his last kind of year in Cincinnati if things don't go well. So we'll have to wait and see.
Talking of things going a bit off and a bit weird last year, how wide is the restraining order in the Cincinnati area against Hugh Jackson?
Not as wide as you're intimating. Hugh, it's such a shame for Hugh because he's a really good bloke, and he did really well in Cincinnati. He was a really good offensive coordinator. He was a good positions coach. He was really popular with the fans and with the players as well. You only have to watch that Hard Knocks series a few years back to know that he was really popular with the players. And then he went to the Raiders and made a few daft trades and kind of got them back to 8-8, but then, you know, was released by Mark Davis after Al Davis died. And then he came back to Cincinnati again, did a pretty good job. But unfortunately for him, that experience in Cleveland in a toxic organization just absolutely destroyed him. And there's a really good article about, actually, an interview with Hugh Jackson about what happened to him mentally after that experience in Cleveland. Unfortunately, that has scarred him and scarred him and also scarred his reputation, which unfortunately I think is kind of too scarred now. I don't think he'll ever be a head coach again, you know. But certainly when he came to Cincinnati, he came back to Cincinnati because Marvin obviously was a big mate of his, and he offered him a bit of a lifeline to come back and kind of help out in this kind of weird executive assistant role or whatever it was. Before he went to Cleveland, there was a succession plan in place. I don't know if you've read that before, but. Because Marvin had always been talking about, you know, who was going to succeed him. And, there was always that succession plan. Hugh was offensive coordinator. When Marvin left, he might go upstairs to be general manager or something like that. And Hugh would become head coach, but then he went and got the head coaching gig in Cleveland. Now, when Marvin left, there was people feared that succession plan would then be put in place. I think Hugh gets a tough time, you know, unjustly, but we're kind of glad that he's not our head coach, put it that way.
So defensively, for the Bengals this year, doesn't, apart from obviously the every down stars you got in Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap on the defensive line, doesn't seem to be much else from the outside. Is that fair or?
No, I don't think so. Last year, I mean, we had the offense looked terrific last year, actually, even with a suspect offensive line. We looked fantastic offensively for the first part of the season until, you know, I must say, you know, injuries completely decimated our season last year. I mean, I've never known anything like it. It's like, you know, we're talking about 16 starters were out through injury towards the end of the season, and no team can kind of get over that, really. However, Marvin made a catastrophic hire for defensive coordinator last year, a guy called Terrell Austin, who was a good guy. All the interviews you thought, yeah, what a nice guy and all the rest of it, but it was awful. And we were shipping points and yards like almost to a record-breaking effect. You know, we were that bad defensively, which is really weird for us because the past decade, you know, with Mike Zimmer, Paul Gunther, we had a good defense, and that was the kind of side of the ball that really kind of saved us most of the time. So to have a really, I mean, not just a bad defense, but a shockingly bad defense was quite a shock. So the hope, I mean, Marvin actually went back and he fired Terrell Austin sort of three quarters of the way through last season and actually took the reins of defensive coordinator himself and did steady the ship quite a lot, actually. But there are some good talent. We've got Geno and Carlos. Watch out for Carl Lawson, an edge player who is an absolute monster. And he's just coming off an ACL and he's back and firing all cylinders. So we're super excited to see how Carl Lawson goes this year because we think he's an absolute star in the making. We have got, interestingly, we've only kept four linebackers in the active roster on the 53, which is causing lots of nervousness among Bengals fans, I must say. But our secondary is really good. We've got William Jackson, who is primed to be a Pro Bowler. I think he's got real Pro Bowl talent. And also Jesse Bates III, our second year free safety. And I think, you know, he was borderline Pro Bowl last year. And I think if he continues to improve, then he will be, you know, he'll be at that Pro Bowl standard. But we've got other players like, you know, Andrew Billings, Ryan Glasgow on the defensive line. We signed Kerry Wynn from the Giants. He had an outstanding preseason. We've got Sam Hubbard, who had 6.5 sacks as a rookie last year. We're hoping, you know, he's going to kick on in his second year again. Our defense was almost historically bad last year, even with Geno and Carlos, who had just been, you know, fantastic for almost a decade, you know. It's going to be interesting. We have got a new defensive coordinator. The defense looked pretty good in the preseason, so we're hoping, you know, that it will be an improvement. It really does need to improve, and I think I've got a feeling it will.
I've got to be honest, I had forgot about Wake Forest and Jesse Bates. He was, as you say, up there in the Rookie of the Year stuff. So overall then, seems like what's your confidence prediction for this week?
But for the game on Sunday, I think you guys will win. I wouldn't be surprised because our offensive line is just so bad. We've had some terrible luck again. Our first round left tackle, Jonah Williams, tore his pectoral and was out for the season. You know, he tore that in OTAs, you know, so he's out for the season. Cordy Glenn, who didn't really live up to the hype when he was traded last year. He's still in the concussion protocol, so he might not make it. So we have the prospect of of Andre Smith, a 10-year veteran tackle who's not very good anymore, going against Jadeveon Clowney and all the rest of your guys. You know, so and we've got Bobby Falstart Hart on the right hand side, the right tackle. you know, it's just a bit of a mess, our offensive line. However, I would expect us, though, to bolster that. I would expect to see some tight end help on the line quite regularly. And, you know, I do think we are going to hurt you in certain areas, because I think that that Taylor, you know, knows how to play against you guys. And I think there'll be lots of play action, and I think he'll get those linebackers biting, and that's when we'll see some, you know, throws a bit more down the field in that sort of intermediate area. I think we will hurt you. Now, I know that you've got issues at wide receiver, and your offensive line isn't the best either. So I think it might be closer than a lot of people think. I just think with home field advantage, which is, as you guys know, so crucial for you guys, and just our propensity for mental errors and whatnot, especially on the offensive line, I just can't see anything other than a Seattle win. But what I do want to see from us, I want us to see, I want to see us compete. And, you know, because some outlets and media are saying that it's going to be a 20-point victory plus for you guys.
Won't happen.
I hope it won't be. I'm expecting a good game, because actually the past two times we played you guys, yes, we won, but they've been pretty good games. And, you know, it's the start of the season. We're all excited. I'm just looking forward to it. You know, I don't hate the Seahawks, far from it. I love Russell Wilson. I love watching you guys play. So I'm looking forward to a good competitive game, and I hope it's a close one, because I think we've certainly got the talent. I think if the scheme checks out, I think we've got some players that can hurt you. But, you know, I expect it to be something like 27-20, or, you know, 31-21, or 31-24, or something. Do you know what I mean? You'll win by a touchdown.
I don't see a 20-point win. That just doesn't happen. Seahawks week 1, 2, or 3, really, does it, Adam?
No, I see like a 13-11 Seahawk win with some stupid scoring. Just like that Dolphins game a couple of years ago, which relied on that little kind of push off Doug Baldwin touchdown with a lot in the last minute of the game. I can see it being a tight and cagey one, which we just edge out on a day that maybe she sees some boos of the offense every now and again, because it gets a little bit stodgy.
So Paul, we do massively appreciate taking your time. If you want to throw out some of your plugs where people can keep up, listen to the podcast and follow your Bengals UK, UK Bengals.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. We are at @Hooday_UK on Twitter and Bengals UK on Facebook. Our podcast, Cincinnati, will be out every week during the season, all being well. You can find that on SoundCloud and Spotify and Stitcher and Apple Podcasts and all the rest of it. And so that's us. Yeah, but mainly I guess Twitter is the big one for us. So yeah, @Hooday_UK if anybody wants to give us a follow. So,
and obviously, end of October, you'll have a lot more, 99% of Seahawks fans, I'd imagine, if not 100%, being a Bengals fan for the week when you play the Rams over here in London.
Yeah, I mean that 3 years ago was just a crazy experience, and I'm sure you guys experienced that last year, you know.
Oh yes.
And I, you know, because my mate, you know, I mentioned earlier, was, you know, is a big Seahawks fan. You know, I did accompany him to the pub, the Seahawks pub and whatnot, and it brought back some fantastic memories, you know, because obviously the game against the Redskins 3 years ago, we didn't know what to expect, but it was just the most insane, crazy weekend, you know, ever, I think. And then it was just like, oh, we've got a game to go to as well. Are you kidding me? Wow, okay. Almost forgot about the game on Sunday because all the rest of it was so much fun, you know.
So
we can't wait, really. It's the Rams. They're a good team. And, slightly worried about that one. But it doesn't really matter. I think it doesn't really matter. I know that's a strange thing to say.
No, you're spot on.
We want to win the game. But it's obviously, when there's a London game, it's much more than the game. It is. Yeah. the pub and meeting friends off Twitter that you'd never met before, meeting people from the States you'd never met before, yeah. You know, seeing which legend player they're going to bring out. You know, I was standing at the bar next to Anthony Munoz and Ken Anderson, are two of the most legendary Bengals that you can ever likely to meet. You know, it was just, it's like this, you kind of had to pinch yourself, really. So we're hoping for more of the same in October. It should be great fun.
Yeah, well, mine and Adam's Wembley week last year ended in a Mayfair hotel bar with Walter Jones and Darren McFadden, so that kind of explains what our week was like.
never let the game get in the way of the game weekend is what I would say.
Absolutely. That's good advice.
Yeah, massive thanks, Paul, for coming on, and wish you all the luck for 15 games of this.
Yeah, likewise, guys. Likewise. Yeah. Stuart and Adam, thanks for having me on. You do a great job, and you know, let's keep banging the drum and have a great season. You know,
thanks very much.
All right, cheers, guys.
Thank you. Were you noticeably more nervous that day than any other game?
No, we knew we were going to win. I remember watching a film on Denver. Probably the Tuesday or Wednesday, me and Beast, we were in a film room. We were watching it probably the Tuesday or Wednesday right after we had beat San Francisco. And literally, we watched one quarter of one of their games. And we said, oh, man, this shit gonna be easy. Did I say that out loud? My bad. I didn't mean to.
So, yeah, massive thanks to Paul for jumping on the podcast. I've got to be honest, Adam, when we started the conversation half an hour or so ago, my confidence for this week was higher than it is now, because Paul just sure sounds confident about what the Bengals can do, not only this week but in 2019. It doesn't seem to fit, as he intimated, that the kind of feeling around, the wider feeling around this team. Is your confidence changed after talking to Paul?
Well, he's done the classic thing that like someone like Ray Parler does, where he just lists a lot of names, and as a result you think, oh my goodness, they've got so many names. But what I'm kind of hoping is that a lot of those names are actually rubbish, so I'm still fairly confident for Sunday. But Seahawks opening weekend is never a particularly fun watch at home. So
yeah, the Seahawks do against the Bengals open the season at home for just the seventh time in the last 20 years, and the Seahawks are, as you hinted to, that are only 16-27 all time on opening weekend. So is this week one game against the Bengals at home comforts, is it going to be a tone setter or a cobweb blower for these Seahawks, Adam?
I think it'll be the latter, and I don't think there should be any kind of freak out after that, because it happens very often, and typically the season still works out okay for us.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Paul kind of got to with the 7-point win, kind of, I think the 20-plus point wins for Seahawks are very unlikely this weekend. Is there anyone you expect to see something from? Obviously, a lot of the eyes will be on the new Seahawks number 90, Jadeveon Clowney, but anyone else you're looking forward to seeing something from?
I think someone like, and this is probably a bit harsh, but someone like Jonasua probably needs to make a couple of catches to kind of justify that position that he's got on the roster, because he in preseason he looked very good, and you would hope that he can carry that through. So I'm hoping that we can see a little bit of him that kind of justifies the pick and the promotion to third, maybe fourth wide receiver on the roster. I think it's going to be big to see what the secondary do. It is my main position of doubt. And although we're not dealing with the most high power offense, it'll be interesting to see how they can keep things locked down in the back end.
Yeah, I think that defensive secondary, I think a lot of talk. I think Tedrick Thompson's the one, obviously, what you said before, Earl Thomas Matters is a theme through a lot of people on Seahawks Twitter, and seeing him step up, or Bradley McDougal, or whoever plays, especially in that middle of the secondary. Obviously, you've got Marquise Blair, you've got Ugo Amadi, who could play back there, Leno Hill as well. And so, yeah, that's the kind of position I want to kind of see from. And also someone who if the Jerome Brown hype through all the offseason is legit, even if it's just more prominence in the offense and how the offense clicks, if Jerome Brown's more involved and is more of an influence on that, then that could only be a good thing and something I kind of want to see, because at the moment it's just Tyler Lockett and just names, isn't it?
Yeah, right now. So we need to see it.
Yeah. One to watch for you on offense in particular?
Let's go with Jermaine Ifedi. He's someone I'm not saying he's going to be our best player, but he's someone that's had a lot of talk and confidence around him, so I want to see him put in a good performance at right tackle.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go for Joran Brown. One to watch on defense in particular?
It's got to be JD. JD? Yeah. JC.
Well, yeah, but all the journalists were calling him JD during his press conference a couple of days ago.
Interesting. Well, JC is not my favourite initials these days, so I think I'll stick with JD.
I think I'll say one to watch on defence this week. I would also kind of see if he's active, which is a weird thing to say for a first round pick, what LJ Collier and the role that he could play this week and obviously into the season. Confidence prediction, Adam?
As I say, I think it's going to be something stupid like 14-10, 13-11, 12-9.
Yeah.
Just a real sludge, but a win. And that's all that really matters.
Yeah, I think 17-10, 17-9, something like that. I don't see it being one we will remember, or one that will feature on America's Game next summer, Adam.
Probably not, although if it is an America's Game, then I'll be very, very happy indeed. I'm probably a touch surprised, if I'm honest. But hey, we live in hope.
Wider NFL, week one, it's probably hard to do either of these, but lock and shock. Adam, I'll go first. I think the lock of the week is the Chiefs to beat the Jaguars.
I was just looking at that one. I think that is a good one. I am going to go with the return of Zeke Elliott for the Cowboys over the Giants.
Okay. Shock of the week, Adam?
I think I can do this as a shock. I'm going to go for the Panthers to beat the Rams.
That's the one I was looking at. I kind of like that one. I'm going to go, just because I think off-season hype is annoying for most part, Bruce Arians to throw a surprise and be just exactly what Jameis Winston needs. I think the Buccaneers will go and beat the 49ers in week one, a home game. It's a long way for the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo is still a lot of questions around him. I think that could be the one. Other NFL news headlines, obviously Antonio Brown is just moaning about absolutely everything this week. Also, I do want to quickly praise 149er Aziz. I think he's a 49er. I'm guessing from the source he's a 49er. Aziz Al Shahir, who has changed his number from number 46 to number 51. And when asked why he changed, he said because number 46 is a fullback number, bro. I mean, he's possibly my favourite player I've never heard of until 4 hours ago, Adam.
Well, we do have our issues with rubbish numbers, and Jermaine Ifedi needs to be very much looked at for that. And I have to say, Jadeveon Clowney going from 91 to 90 is a bit of a setback for me, because I thought 91 was great. But yeah, I mean, 46 and 51, just horrendous. Just any position, show some self-respect.
Yeah, if you're a linebacker,
you're on offense. Exactly, yeah.
Anything else? The NFL stuff caught your eye?
I think that's about it. I mean, it's football season, so let's go. I mean, I'm ready.
Yeah, so
Rosie's not ready for no more Sundays nights out till February, but I'm ready.
So if you want to get involved with the podcast, you can. Any ideas for bits, features, or guests during the season? We are going to try and get more people from the UK scene on during the season to talk about the team that the Seahawks are facing that particular week. If you want to get to the podcast, you can on Facebook, the Possession Podcast, or via the wider group page, which is UK Seattle Seahawks fans, on Twitter at Seahawkers UK, and on Instagram is UK Seahawkers. Until next week, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
This fan base is probably the craziest I ever played in front of, man. I don't think it's nothing like it. And I'm glad I get to be on the opposite side of it, get to experience that while I'm out there on that defense. And I know it's gonna help us out on defense when you hear that crowd yelling and they often have to use a silence cadence. And you get to see that tap, man, you can get off that rock. So I'm looking forward to that.